Hello, everybody. Welcome in to the Lakers Collective. We have a huge summer ahead for the Lakers. We talk about it all the time. This is one of the biggest summers in recent memory for the Los Angeles Lakers. So many decisions to be made. So much is going to be done to set the future direction of the team. That's what we're going to be talking about on today's show. He's Jovan Buha, Jason Timpf. I am Trevor Lane. Happy to have you all here. Do me a favor, though, real quick, before we get into the show, double check right now and see if you are subscribed to the YouTube channel or not. If you are not, please fix that. Hit that subscribe button. Turn on those notifications as well so you get notified when we go live for our shows. Also, follow us over on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you listen to podcasts. Guys, how are you doing? How are we feeling in the wake of that OKC versus San Antonio masterpiece last night that has 28 teams thinking, oh my God, how do we catch up to that?
First of all, it's good to see you guys. Thanks for holding it down last week while I was in Chicago. Chicago, really cool city. Just like I've been to several big cities in my life, and I've been to Tokyo, I've been to New York, been to LA a lot, obviously. And I just was really impressed by just the culture and the food and just the architecture. It was cool. It was cool to get to hang out there for a little bit, but it's good to be back and to see you guys. And I'm sorry that we are unfortunately on the other side of Lakers basketball at this point, but we got a lot to get into. It's going to be fun.
Yeah, I texted you guys last night after watching that game that the Lakers have a lot of work to do this summer to get to the level or to at least try to get close to the level of either of these two teams. This is setting up to be a classic series. It's the first time two 62 plus win teams are playing since the Jazz and the Bulls in the 1998 finals. So this is something we haven't seen in 28 years. You have two of the three or four best players in the NBA going at it. And I mean, you might be watching the best player in real time just take that mantle from SGA. And I mean, Wemby had a historic performance last night, youngest player in NBA history with a 40-20 game in his first conference finals appearance. So the West for now runs through OKC and San Antonio, and the Lakers have a lot of work to do to catch up.
I think even like if we're being real, if we gave them truth serum, I'd have to imagine even the Knicks and the Cavs on some level were watching that game thinking, shit, that's going to be a problem. At least we can make the finals, but that's going to be an issue to deal with either one of those teams. But of course, we're focused here on the Lakers. The Lakers do have a lot to figure out this summer, a lot of things that they're going to have to do. Catching up to OKC, if that's the bar, catching up to OKC to San Antonio, that's, of course, a very high bar to set that they're going to have to find a way to do it. But again, they are not the only team that's going to be in that spot around the league. So right now the focus needs to be, how do you make this team, this Lakers team, as good as it possibly can be? Jovan, we were talking a little bit before we came on the air here about kind of setting the table in terms of what the big decisions are for the Lakers this summer. And I think one of the big things is just, what direction are they going to go? Are they going to be a cap space team, which I think is the most likely outcome here? Are they going to stay above the cap? What are they going to pay LeBron? What are the big questions that you're kind of looking forward to getting answers to here over the next, 6 weeks or so?
I think you just laid it out perfectly, where the biggest question of all to me is the cap space versus being an over the cap team. If you're a cap space team, that either means LeBron isn't going to be back, or LeBron's taking a massive pay cut and you are potentially losing a current rotation player or two, and having to create unless LeBron's taking the minimum, which I don't foresee, if he's somewhere in that 15, 20, 25 million range, that's somewhere between, 40 to 50% of your cap space. And now you have to make some tough decisions on the back end with Marcus Smart, Rui Hachimura, Luke Kennard. And it really just might come down to like how much each of those guys commands and making a decision from there. So that to me is like, how do they want to approach the roster building? And what is like plan A basically, right? And you have to have contingency plans. And depending on, I think the Giannis domino is a huge domino here of how strongly do the Lakers pursue him? And if not, being the ones to actually get him, the Lakers are in a unique position to help facilitate a Giannis trade as a third or fourth team in that deal, and potentially take on if Minnesota gets involved or if Cleveland gets involved, and like some of these teams need to shed salary in a Giannis trade, and maybe Milwaukee doesn't want their players, they can reroute them to the Lakers. So I think from like a macro perspective, it's what is the, from the Lakers perspective, what is the optimal way to build the roster? Then from there, like if you want, I mean, there's a version of this which I'm not advocating for, but the Lakers could simply run it back. You could pay LeBron whatever he wants or mm-hmm. close to it. You could just pay Rui. You could pay Luke. The one guy you potentially lose in this scenario is Marcus Smart because of his limited bird rights. The most the Lakers could offer Marcus is roughly $6.3 million starting out, which if he's opting out of his $5.3 million contract, I don't think he's opting out to sign a $6.3 million contract. So you would either have to use your non-taxpayer MLE, either the full thing or a portion of it on Marcus, or you just let Marcus walk and then you try to use that tool on someone else. But to me, it's like, how do the Lakers like really feel about this roster? And then how do they want to go about building it? Because you can make some changes above the cap. You can do, again, non-taxpayer MLE. You can make some trades with like Vando and Dalton and some of the guys that you might want to offload. But your pathway to really improving the roster is limited. So I think they're going to be a cap space team. But then within that, there's the contingency of what happens with LeBron, what happens with the role players, and how do they go about navigating a lot of questions with that.
Yeah, and it's a great call out on the Marcus Smart situation. You'd have his non-bird rights, which only gives you what you can give him 120% of his current salary. It's probably not enough to hang on to him. So even in a scenario where they're saying, hey, let's just run this whole thing back, you're probably not actually going to be able to run it back and actually be losing one of your most important pieces, most likely anyway, in Marcus Smart. Now, maybe in an ideal world, he just picks up his player option and the Lakers give him kind of a wink, wink. Hey, we'll have early bird rights on you next year. Then we can really take care of you. If I'm Marcus, if I'm his agent, I'm not advocating for him to do that. So I think that's where things get tricky if you do go down that path. But under that scenario, that's where you just say, look, we'll pay LeBron whatever it takes to keep him. We'll pay him. We'll run this roster back. We'll make some, you know, minor additions around the margins, and we'll, fingers crossed, hope that a healthy Luka come playoff time makes all the difference. But I agree. I don't think that's really the direction they should go. I think they probably go the cap space route. And then you've got some big questions on, you know, what happens with DeAndre Ayton? Does he opt in or out? What about Marcus Smart? Where does he wind up ultimately going? Are you going to bring back? Who do you prioritize? Is it Rui Hachimura? Is it Luke Kennard? Do you find a path to bringing them both back? Will LeBron take less or not? And then, of course, what do you do on the trade front? Which, as you mentioned, in a deal, you know, potentially with Milwaukee or anybody else, you could absorb salary in a trade without having to send salary back, as long as you're willing to eat into that cap space. So a lot of huge questions for Rob Pelinka to figure out. And this is why I think the Lakers are, and we talked about it in the last show, Jovan, why the Lakers are the most fascinating team of the summer, because they have so many different ways they can go. There's different ways to put the puzzle pieces together, and which path they choose is going to be incredibly important here. Jason, we look at what they should be prioritizing here. What should the main goal be for the Lakers this summer? Like, what if you're Rob Pelinka and you sit down, you say, I'm going to assemble this roster. What's the primary objective of doing this? What lens should we be looking through?
I'm going to start really simple and then kind of go out from there. Mm-hmm. To put it very simply, I think it's talent acquisition. I think when you look at the Spurs Thunder series, the biggest thing that stands out is just how many, like, not just good basketball players they have, but like legitimate, awesome starting caliber basketball players they have. Like, the Spurs have six dudes. So when De'Aaron Fox is unavailable, you just slide Dylan Harper in, and he's another dude who can go for, what did he go for last night? Like 24, 6, and 10 or whatever the heck it was. You just, this incredible game, right? And then with the Thunder, it's like right out the gates, you're like, oh man, I don't think Lou Dort or Isaiah Hartenstein can play against Victor Wembanyama, but we have Alex Caruso, we have Cason Wallace, we have these AJ Mitchell, we've got eight starting caliber players that we can go to at any given moment in our lineups. And like, there's all these interesting conversations you can have about Lakers bench guys. So I shouldn't say bench guys, Lakers role players. Like, for instance, Rui Hachimura being like a big athletic dude who can knock down threes seems pretty useful in a matchup against a Spurs team where I'm trying to space the floor with the Victor Wembanyama problem. Marcus Smart was arguably the most valuable role player on the team this year in terms of his on-off numbers and just all the little things that he did. Luke Kennard and the value he brought driving closeouts and spacing the floor. We can go on and on about all those guys. not a single one of them would crack the top six for either of these teams, and arguably the top eight for the Thunder. And so it, to me, it is so much of like my conversation around this summer. We could talk about which direction they want to go, retaining existing guys, trying to go bigger, trying to go faster, trying to go for targeting a center as the primary option this summer, or targeting a small forward as the primary option this summer. I've kind of like changed my entire perspective towards like, who's the best basketball player we can get? Like, who's the best player we can get to come in and give us a talent boost for a team that, like, I would argue the Lakers have three starting caliber players, and that's if they keep LeBron. Like, let's say that you lose LeBron, or you prioritize Rui and you offend him and he walks or whatever. Is Rui as good of a starting caliber player as any of those 14 names that I mentioned for those two teams? No. And so, like, I think talent acquisition has to be the key. And so, like, I'll even take it a step further to say, like, I was very much anti-Giannis, but, like, I would at least consider it now. It would have Same. To make a ton of sense.
Yeah.
But I That's would at least I'm at. Be like, yeah, like, I would at least consider it now, because I'd be like, talent. Like, we don't have enough awesome basketball players. So it's something you'd have to consider. Now, to your any Giannis trade includes Austin, that becomes infinitely more complicated when you're trying to sell it to Luka. And I'm not saying that is like a realistic outcome. My point is just my entire focus for how to build this basketball team now shifts towards just finding high-level talent.
You just came from the Chicago Draft Combine. I'm sure you had plenty of conversations there. What did you get any sense of kind of the general vibe from others about the Lakers?
No, I didn't really have I was there more for the herd. I wasn't really there for the combine. So that wasn't and obviously I was covering the NBA playoffs. So I was working every single night and doing our content during the day. So that really wasn't the purpose of my visit.
Got it. Okay. So if we're talking about maybe going after a Giannis trade, like the challenge with Giannis, of course, is then you've got depth issues. And that's the concern. Can you still build out depth? But you're saying it doesn't matter. You need to go after the top end talent, because otherwise you're not going to have enough, even just a five-man rotation, five guys that you could put into a game. They're going to be able to stick with some of these top teams in the league right now. Jovan, you said you're starting to lean that way as well. What's got you leaning more in towards, hey, and I'm not even saying the Lakers could even get him, because I do think that teams like Golden State, teams like New York, Miami will certainly be very intrigued buyers on the market and could potentially offer more than what the Lakers could offer. We'll see what that looks like. But why are you coming around on maybe pursuing a big fish like Giannis Antetokounmpo?
I think for me, it's as simple as I don't see any realistic scenario in which the Lakers can build the depth of OKC or San Antonio in one offseason. I think we are talking about on the highs, like, if the Lakers have, I think a great offseason to me, like putting a potential Giannis acquisition to the side, would be adding two starting level players to this roster. And like, you know, we're talking about, I think Marcus is like a fringe starter depending on the context of the situation. But to Jason's point, like, I think they are somewhere between having only three at minimum, but like four max, like starting level players on high level contender. So that number to me needs to be closer to five definitive, or ideally six. And if the Lakers getting to like six starting level players would to me be like a win for the offseason. But you know, you're not getting to OKC's level where they have a billion guys. And then San Antonio, even them, like I'd say they probably have seven if you add in Keldon Johnson, you know, because that's, I'd say six last night, then seven with Fox back. So like, I think it's just gonna be tough to match these teams' depth and youth and athleticism they've built through the draft. The Lakers have not had that luxury, or as Rob said at the exit interview, it's just not really their style of having patience and kind of building year over year. So if the Lakers are like, I think the worst case scenario or the worst way to try to build this roster would be like have a diet version of OKC or San Antonio, where you're just a worse version of them. And I think you have to look at if the Lakers are keeping, I mean, they're keeping Luka, but if they're keeping Austin and LeBron, and we take a step back and look at, okay, so you have these three awesome offensive players, first trio in NBA history to average 20 plus points, 5 plus assists. You have a unique combination of shot creation and ISO scoring, pick and roll scoring, post up scoring, and then playmaking and passing, you know, everywhere with those three. What do you need to do to support those three and build out the best version? And I think basically every other rotation player has to be an elite athlete or an elite defender. And if you don't check one of those two boxes, you probably should not be on this roster and you probably should not be in the rotation. And so we start to go through some of the guys. It's like Luke Kennard checks neither box. Rui kind of checks like half a box. Like, I think he can be an effective defender in some situations, but clearly is not like a perimeter stopper wing defender. Then athletically, I think Rui is pretty athletic and is a bit of an underrated athlete, but he doesn't always leverage it well, especially on the defensive side. Marcus Smart checks the defensive box, doesn't really check the athlete box. Like, he is powerful and strong, and against smaller guards, he can bully them, as we saw throughout the season. But like, you know, maybe he checks that box half, but he does check the defense box. So I think Marcus is a guy who fits in this. But I think like that should be the lens through which the Lakers build this. Of, you know, Luka is not Shea, just like Shea is not Luka. Luka's not Wemby, just like Wemby is not Luka. So it's like you're coming at the roster building from a completely different starting point in terms of what fits around your best players. And it's just different, right? Wemby allows you to defend a certain way. Shea, you know, allows you to play offense a certain way, just like Luka allows you to play offense a certain way. So it's like, I think the Lakers need to look at it from a strength model in terms of how do we amplify what our best players do and how do we also protect them and build the best roster around that. So I say all this to say, if we go back to the Giannis point, like, I just think if you add Giannis, now you have two top five players and you are coming at it from a, like, you got to be careful with the rest of the roster. And that's a challenge that is going to be difficult, especially for this front office, which I think really struggled to put the right pieces around LeBron, AD, and Russ. We saw, like, when they had just minimums to deal with, they did a pretty poor job of identifying proper talent. But I would just say with the Giannis point, like, if you can't beat them with the depth, maybe you beat them with the over-the-top talent. And it's like, we have seen throughout NBA history, when you put two top five guys together, like, I'm thinking Shaq and Kobe, LeBron and Wade, Steph and KD, it's very rare to have two players of that caliber on the same team together. We've seen super teams, we've seen even two top 10 players, but I think it's a little bit different when you have a Luka and a Giannis together. So I think that might just be the way of, like, you at least step into any series with San Antonio and OKC saying, we have two of the three best players on the floor and we have the best duo. Now, is that enough? And does Austin fit into this? Do you have to go in a different direction where it's just those two plus a bunch of depth? Like, I don't have the answer to that, but I am intrigued by the Giannis possibility just because I think trying to mimic what OKC and San Antonio have done is not going to work, because I think you're just going to build a worse version of their roster.
So I've got some thoughts on that, because I don't think you're wrong with everything that you're saying, but I do have a few counterpoints that I'd like to get into. But first, we do need to give a shout out to our sponsor, and that is Prize Picks. You guys can use the code HMA. Link is in the description down below. Play $5, get $50 instantly over on Prize Picks. We've got the big Knicks and Cavs game one coming up. Guys, do you see anything that happens to pique your interest right now here over on Prize Picks? We've got like Sam Merrill, 1.5 threes. He was great in game seven. How do we feel about that?
I think that in general, Merrill might get more playing time than Wade because of the Brunson Hedgen recover. So I don't hate that. Because essentially Brunson's going to guard that guy and he's going to be able to slip out of screens.
All right, let's go ahead and throw that one on there. Anything else that piques your interest? This is just the most popular picks that we're looking at right now.
I mean, we'll see what they throw schematically at Brunson, but I kind of feel like Brunson's going to cook in this matchup. Like, I don't think they have a great, at least with the starters.
Yeah.
I don't think they have a great matchup for Brunson. So I might like the Brunson 27.5 more, but I mean, that is a pretty high line where it does get you to think.
Cool thing, we can go and look and we can see he's missed on three of his last five, hit on two of his of them, obviously. But obviously that was a different matchup though as well.
Yeah.
I'm in on it.
Yeah.
You're in on it?
Let's do it.
Let's do it. All right. 27.5 points on Jalen Brunson. Merrill, 1.5 threes, $10 entry fee, win you $28. You guys want to get in on it, go check out Prize Picks link is in the description down below. That code is HMA. Play $5, get $50 instantly. Okay, so I want to talk a little bit about this idea of going all in on the top down. I mean, this is a very Lakers concept, right? Of we're going to have two of the five best players in the league, and we'll take whatever comes with that. And maybe we can get some guys to take less, some guys that are going to go, oh, damn, they've got Giannis and Luka, or whoever, and Luka doesn't have to be Giannis, but whoever, and Luka, let's go sign up. I want to play with that team. I want to go be in that LA spotlight, and I'm going to take less to go play for the Lakers. And if there's a world where that's possible, if there's a world where you could actually have some type of depth around those guys, doesn't have to be the deepest team in the NBA. Like you said, you're not going to be OKC. You're not going to be San Antonio, but there's some semblance of depth around those guys. Okay. Like I'm not going to complain about having two top five players on the team. I guess my concern would be though, when we look at the way OKC and San Antonio have built their teams, the Lakers have not been a draft heavy team, whether it was by design or by accident, right? In terms of the picks that they made, not really panning out. But when we look at what the Lakers have done historically, they've gone for those superstar duos. But I look at today's NBA, and I think it's not just, well, this is the way that OKC and San Antonio have chosen to build out their teams. I look at the number of soft tissue injuries that we've had hitting this league. I look at stylistically, the speed at which the game is being played, how much ground is having to be covered defensively. I think all of those things are pushing you towards needing more depth. And so I wonder how much of it is, well, OKC decided to zig, so shouldn't the Lakers zag and try stylistically to at least overwhelm them with their top five, versus how much is it just in today's modern NBA, you have to have more depth than you would have, say, 10 years ago, 20 years ago, because of the way that stylistically the game is being played. That would be my concern, not so much with turning yourself into a worse version of OKC, but depriving yourself of what it is that today's game requires. And that, to me, is more depth. So how do you guys feel about that conceptually? Are you okay with going into a season and saying, we know we've got seven guys, but if any one of them is hurt, we don't have a whole lot behind them because we weren't able to build out the depth. We don't have the cap space in order to do it.
So I would argue that is something that is the building out the depth. To me, I keep coming back to the Celtics example with, uh-huh, you know, finding, you know, a Jordan Walsh as a second round pick, or finding a Nimi Keita as like a pro scouting opportunity, where like, I just think that's going to be an issue no matter what, like their ability to fill out the roster. So let's take the non-Giannis example where you pay Austin Reeves 40-something million. And I have a feeling Rui could be the guy who ends up getting squeezed out here if he gets offered some massive deal where it's like 4 years for $100 million and the Lakers just have to say no because they can't afford to tie up a massive $100 million contract on a player that's not going to start for them. You know, like there's a version of, and who knows, Rob may very well view him as imperative to the Luka Doncic structure. I don't know. But like I just think that the Lakers are going to have to find discounted talent anyway. And that's where, by building out the front office, giving Rob a couple of assistant GMs, getting more support in their draft scouting and just finding better talent in the undrafted market, finding better talent in the veteran minimum market and in the mid-level exception market. Like that to me is the issue, regardless of whether it's Giannis or it's someone else. I just think to Jovan's point, if you're going to try to beat OKC in San Antonio, you kind of have to zag a little bit. I was actually thinking about this though, just not to go out of left field here, but this is, mm-hmm, the very strange problem that OKC and San Antonio present. You kind of need a big to play OKC, because if you don't, Hartenstein and Chet are going to kick your ass. But that same big probably won't be playable versus Wemby. So like, how do you rectify that with your team building? You know, like there was that Aaron Gordon.
That's where I feel like Giannis is potentially one of the only solutions here, of like he's the guy who can play against both of those bigs, or you know, both of those sets of bigs.
You're crossing your fingers for your playoff draw, right?
Great point, Jovan. Great point. And like, You know, did you guys see the thing that was going around with Aaron Gordon photoshopped into a Lakers jersey? I don't know if you guys saw that. And like, what's so funny is it seems like such a ridiculous thing, and I wouldn't give up real assets for Aaron Gordon just because simply he can't stay healthy. But like, the idealized version of Aaron Gordon actually makes some sense alongside LeBron and Luka, in the sense that it gives you this like big physical team that fits the switching scheme, that has a lot of like read and react skill involved in. He's just a very good basketball player. It gives you the ability to play him against a team like San Antonio. But it's just, it is a very unique problem that they present, in the sense that you kind of need six starters to be able to beat those two teams, because you need to have like this, unless you have just the most amazing stretch five, which doesn't really exist outside of Wemby and Chet, and they're on those teams. So like, you need some form of like a center for an OKC matchup and a small ball look for a San Antonio matchup. And Giannis is really the only guy that can kind of check both of those boxes, to Jovan's point.
You know, that was actually where I was going to go with this, Jason, was if it's, you know, we're talking about Giannis specifically, and he's somewhat unique in the way he plays the game. Is there anyone else that you could turn to? Let's say Giannis gets traded to Miami. I don't know, wherever. Giannis goes somewhere else. At that point, if you're the Lakers, would you then go more towards that more of a depth-ish model, or do you think you still pursue that top-end talent? And if so, who is it that would check that box for you?
I think at that point, go the depth model. I think Giannis is just a unique talent with a specific skill set that I think matches up. Because I think there's like a... We saw it in the OKC series to a degree of you know, LeBron was able to pick on their small, I mean, even their bigs, but like their smaller guys in the post and attack them and with the power. And like, we saw Wemby do that last night with some of the seals and just the rip through drives to the basket and, you know, the drop steps. And so I think having Giannis against either one of these defenses, like Giannis is stronger than Wemby and Chet by a good deal. Plus you add in his force and his physicality, and I think he's a guy who can hold his own, if not win those physical battles. Obviously Wemby will win plenty of them just because of his size and his length and just his instincts and how great he is defensively. And I'm sure Chet will, I mean, we saw Chet last night win a couple of those battles against Wemby, but I think Giannis can hold his own, and that's where the drop off from Giannis to whichever, like if they don't get Giannis, whichever center they get comes with some form of complication, right? Like I love Walker Kessler. I think he'd be a great addition for the Lakers in a vacuum, but Walker Kessler, you know, is often compared to Rudy Gobert. And we saw what Victor Wembanyama just did to Rudy Gobert in the Minnesota series. And you go to like Jared Allen just had a great game seven, which opens up a possibility of him just not even being available this summer. But yeah, if Cleveland wants to move off of him, like he comes with some, I mean, he's had several low rebounding games. Sometimes the motor can be an issue, or the physicality, the toughness can be an issue with him. He's had some, I think he's really grown over the last couple of years and like isn't the same player he was earlier in his career when he caught a lot of flack, but there still are some limitations with Jared Allen. Nick Claxton, we haven't even seen in the playoffs the last few years, and just, we don't really know what he would look like in a more competitive situation. We saw it years ago, but it's been a minute. And then even like Jalen Duren just caught himself $10+ million this postseason with his performance, and like he comes with a physicality and an athleticism, but I think there's some limitations there, as we saw what Cleveland's front line was able to do to him. So I just look at all the center options right now, and that's before, I mean, we could go down to Mitchell Robinson or like Robert Williams, but that's an even bigger gap from those guys to the types of guys I was just talking about. Like, there is a pretty big concern here in terms of the big situation, and that does bring me back. Like, I've been leaning more on the side of LA needing a true bona fide two-way starting wing, just because those guys are really rare. They're either on rookie contracts and impossible to get, or they're making $25+ million. And if you could get one of those guys like a Peyton Watson or someone like that, I think it's really important. At the same time, we're seeing in this matchup, like, if you don't have a big man of a certain caliber, and we saw DeAndre Ayton was not that big man in the OKC series, you're kind of dead on arrival against both OKC and San Antonio. So that might ultimately be the position that's most important.
You know, I think this is really interesting, because I've been of the mindset that Giannis is because of your depth issues, going that route would be not the ideal path. But I do see what you guys are saying here, that it could, you could wind up just saying, hey, we're going to gamble on the top end here and see if that gives us, particularly if we're talking Giannis, a guy who's got the versatility in order to deal with either San Antonio or OKC. So I think it's an interesting idea for the Lakers to look at. Now, of course, that begs the question, can the Lakers actually get him? Could they get in on that? That, you know, that whole bidding war and that situation. Does Giannis even, the biggest thing, does Giannis even want to be a Laker, right? Because he's got a large degree of control over where he ultimately winds up going, because all he has to say is, no, I don't want to be there, so I won't resign. I'll leave in free agency next year. And that would blow up effectively any deal, similar to what Anthony Davis did before he became a Laker. So that's the piece to this that's really important also to understand, is that Giannis does have a really big say in ultimately where he lands. But I do think this is a really interesting conversation around what the Lakers could do. And it really goes into our topic here of optionality, that the Lakers have a lot of different paths they can potentially pursue here, whether they go star hunting after a player like a Giannis Antetokounmpo, whether they go and try to build out whatever kind of depth that they can. Giannis's fit with Luka, I think, is interesting. Both very, very high usage players. I think they can fit. I think each one, it would be a little bit of an adjustment. They'd have to figure some things out, but I think they certainly can fit. I think the question, though, and I'll throw this to you, that I want to know is, what would LeBron's response be? Let's say, dream scenario, I know we're kind of walking down this pathway. Let's say the Lakers do trade for Giannis Antetokounmpo. Does LeBron just say, yeah, I want to play with that dude. What do you have left over? Give me that and I'll come play. Does that push LeBron to look elsewhere? What do you think that would mean for LeBron's future in LA?
LeBron would sign a vet minimum so fast. Like, it would be so fast. Like, are you kidding? He gets to stay home in LA and play with two of the top five players in the world. Like, let me actually rephrase this, or kind of pitch it back to you guys like this. If you make a trade for Giannis, you start him at the five, right?
Does he?
I think you start. I think you start LeBron at the four and Giannis at the five, because you're a switching team. So, like,
yeah. I mean, I guess the immediate issue that pops up in my head is, like, you are getting Giannis to agree to play the five full time and all that comes with it, and you're also getting Giannis to be a primary screen and roll player, right? And he'll get his inverted pick and rolls, and he'll get his elbow touches and post-ups and whatnot, but you're asking Giannis to be a high-volume screener at a level he's never been before. And I think there was some progress with him and Dame toward the end of that relationship, but I don't think it was something Giannis ever, like, fully embraced. And so, like, if you add Giannis, it's still Luka's team. Luka is still the number one. The Lakers have given him the keys to the franchise. I don't think that's changing just by adding Giannis. I would assume Luka would embrace him, and it would be kind of a co-number one thing. But it's still going to be Luka's show, and it's going to be a lot of pick and roll. And if you are going with the Giannis-LeBron, I wonder if Giannis, like, fully is on board with that, because you're now asking him to do things that he's been very reluctant to do. And not only do them, but do them at a level and, like, a volume that he's just never really embraced.
I think you switch. Like, I think, like, the pick and roll piece of it, like, let's pretend that he's playing at the four. Like, you're running ball screens. Let's say Ayton, like, just accepts his option. Is Giannis spotting up in the corner? You need to stretch big.
That's why.
To put it very simply, the only way it fits is him being the screener. So, like before we have any more discussion about, like, unless they find a stretch five, which they don't have, which is a whole other problem. So, like, I mean, maybe you work out a Miles Turner as part of the deal,
Drew Timmy,
and
then
you could have that discussion. Yeah, Drew Timmy. There you go.
Timmy.
I think in general, that structure, like Luka, LeBron, Giannis, you know, with Austin and then some other kind of two-way guard, probably you almost have Luka be your three defensively. Like that, to me, as a switching group, would be the way that would function. Hey, Giannis, we're not asking you to defend ball screens. You're switching, and you're not going to have to bang with every center. Like, LeBron's going to help you with that. Luka's going to help you with that, and we're going to do it as a team. We're going to double and rotate, you know. And then for the Luka pick and rolls, I mean, you could not script a better partnership in terms of, okay, you either have to put your five man on Giannis, and now Giannis is going to annihilate you on rolls, or you're going to have to go small And good luck going small against a team that has Luka, LeBron, and Giannis on the floor. So, I mean, yeah, like I for the record, Jovan, to your point, I think Giannis can say he doesn't like LA, but what you're talking about is probably why he doesn't want to go there. But I'm just saying, like, conceptualizing what it would look like if he came, I think it would look like him at the five.
I agree.
Yeah. So let's say Milwaukee calls up the Lakers and says, by the way, the other piece to this was Austin Reeves would have to agree to go to Milwaukee. Would he want to do that knowing Giannis is gone? I don't know. My guess would be no, but let's say what's that? Yeah, right? He say, but here's a lot of money. Let's say Milwaukee, let's say he's on board and Milwaukee calls up and says, we want Austin and all three of your firsts. Do you get your 25th pick in this year's draft plus your two other tradable firsts? We'll work out the timing to make it all work. That's what we want. Are you saying yes?
Well, Austin has to say yes.
Sure, but let's assume we get past that hurdle. Let's say that he does. Okay. He does.
He's on board.
Yeah.
He's going to go be the guy in Milwaukee for...
Yep.
It's a rough roster.
Him and Rollins would be a fun backcourt.
I don't see any way they get Giannis without giving up the three picks at a minimum. Then it's a matter of, does Milwaukee want Austin and is Austin on board with the sign and trade? And then if that's the price, I get like, yeah, but I think the issue here, as I see it, is like you now are, you're pot committed to the Luka Giannis duo, which is fine. And that's what we're partly advocating for here, but like you have no real means to upgrade the roster in any other scenario. Cause not only is this costing you Austin, it's costing you LeBron, unless maybe you are getting him to agree to the non-taxpayer MLE, or maybe he does take the minimum and you know is on board with that and you know whatever. But then you're losing Rui, you're losing Marcus. Like unless those guys are taking minimums, or you get one of them for the exception, and LeBron's on the minimum. But like you just start to run into this. We have like those two awesome top five players. And then, like, our roster is Vando, DK, Jake, Adu, and maybe one of the other role players that we kept, maybe LeBron. But it gets pretty tricky very immediately. And so I would like to keep, I guess, like, either Austin or a first, but that might not be possible.
You know, when you look at the math of this, Giannis is making $58 million, $58.5 million, almost $60 million. But we're talking about Austin Reeves going out. Even if you were to sign him to a max contract, from the Lakers calculus of this, he's only counting as just under $21 million in terms of his cap hold. So in terms of your spending power, you're right. It's basically gone. It's not like Austin's salary is offsetting Giannis. You'd wind up with bringing in Giannis. And part of what you'd be giving up, in addition to the three picks, in addition to Reeves in the scenario, it would be almost everything you've got in terms of cap space, unless you were able to say, hey, because we're doing all three picks and all that, we need you to take back Jared Vanderbilt, or we need to take back whoever, you know. And obviously the math can change if DeAndre Ayton opts out or opts in, or Smart opts out or opts in, right? There's different things that can change the math on it, but that would have to be part of the consideration as well. That's part of what you're trading in this scenario, is your cap space. Anyway, we didn't intend to go as deep down the Giannis to LA path.
No, this is we had a pre-show meeting. We Giannis, I don't even think Giannis came up in our pre-show meeting. So
no, but this was fun. I was got because you guys started presenting some things that I hadn't considered of going down the Giannis path. So I think this was a really helpful conversation. Now, I do want to get into our checks. I know that's going to bump us to a lot of other topics that we were intending to get into today. So let me give a quick shout out to a sponsor here, and then we're going to get into our chat questions for the second half of the show.
So the NBA playoffs are obviously a grind, but I can see the light at the end of the tunnel finally. Now that my wife and I live in Colorado, we're by Red Rocks. And so I'm excited to go see some concerts this year. I'm actually very excited to go see the Tedeschi Trucks Band. They're coming to play a two-night set at the end of July, July 31st. I think Derek Trucks is one of the best guitarists in the history of the world. So very, very excited to get out, which is why I want to give the sponsor of today's video, SeatGeek, a huge shout out. With over 35 million downloads, SeatGeek is the number one rated ticketing app. And it's really just about how simple the process is. It's so easy to open up the app, look at your map of all the seats, but you can sort by deal, which is my favorite feature, and they rate every single ticket on a scale of 1 to 10 by how good the deal is. So I know if I'm picking from these ones at the top, I'm getting an amazing deal. And as I work further down the list, obviously it might not be as good of a deal, which kind of just simplifies the process for me and helps me know that I'm getting the right ticket for the right price. There are more than 70,000 events listed on SeatGeek, including concerts, sports, festivals, and more. And you can now get World Cup tickets on SeatGeek. And by the way, every ticket is backed by their buyer guarantee. And of course, I have a code for you guys. You can use code COLLECTIVE10 for 10% off your next set of tickets at SeatGeek. That's 10% off any tickets with promo code COLLECTIVE10. Make sure you click the link in the description to download the app and have the code automatically added to your account so you can use it later. Thank you, SeatGeek.
All right. Thank you, SeatGeek, for sponsoring today's show. We'll start with a question that came in before the show officially started from Julian Rojas, who said, if LeBron leaves, Mitch Robinson, 3 years, $39 million. Let's see what else we've got. Oh, there's a bunch of stuff. I wish I could put this one on screen so everybody could see it. Three first-round picks for Herb Jones, 3 seconds, KOJR 320. There's a lot of moving parts here. I wish I could put this one on screen. Laravia, 2 seconds for De'Ron Sharp, Austin Reeves, and Jackson Hayes.
I think KO is Kelly Oubre, and then
is that who that is?
Yeah, I'm not. JR is.
JR 328. That's the problem when we get into these abbreviations.
Maybe it's AR. And he
maybe it's AR. But 328.
Like 28 million per year over 3 years.
Maybe. Amir Coffey for the veteran minimum. Look at overall roster with the additions.
JR Smith in the chat saying let's see what Julian says in the chat.
All right.
It Julian, is Kelly Oubre.
If you could clarify, Kelly. Okay, it's Kelly Oubre.
Oh, okay, well, Kelly Oubre Jr. That's what got it.
That's the JR. Kelly Oubre. It got split on the lines. Okay.
Yeah.
So Kelly Oubre Jr. 3 years, 28. Rui 3 for 54. Smart 3 for 30. Kennard 2 for 13. Kinect Vando DA plus 3 first-round picks for Herb in 3 seconds. Jake Laravia and 2 seconds. Well, that's the problem, is that they don't. Well, I guess you could take the seconds that you're flipping, that you're getting from New Orleans in this deal, and turn it into De'Ron Sharp using Jake Laravia. Ironically, they have the same agent, Sharp and Laravia. Jayshon Tate. So, what do you? I guess to sort through this or start sorting through this, what do we think about Mitch Robinson as a potential target?
I like him on the cheap. I just think can Mitch play against Wemby in a playoff series?
I mean, he did well in the NBA Cup championship, but that was a long time ago, and it's regular season.
Yeah. It's hard to imagine anyone doing well against Wemby.
So this is LeBron leaves, and basically your starting group is Mitch, Rui, Smart, Oubre, Luka, Austin. Then you're starting either Smart or Oubre, probably Rui, because I think Smart, Oubre, you're just a little small there. And then Mitch, and then the other one between Smart and Oubre is coming off the bench. And then I think that's realistic. Like, if LeBron leaves, I think this is a realistic pathway to, but this is where we keep coming back to, like, I understand all of, I've already seen a lot of comments about why are you guys talking about Giannis, and that's unrealistic, or like, you know, depth over star power. I totally understand that. And that's where I've been for most of the offseason. I think what has changed for me is, like, I just did a mailbag where I went through the Lakers cap situation. And I think the, like, a realistic outcome here is, like, you know, if losing, like, you can, even if you dump some of the guys, you're not creating as much cap space as you think. But if you can dump somehow, like, Vando, Dalton, even Jake, whatever, that's like $16 to $22 million extra, which, like, sounds like a lot, but it actually isn't. There's a scenario in which, like, you dump some guys and you still end up with, basically, you run it back like LeBron, Marcus, Rui, you add like 2 players. And, like, that's it. And I just, I don't think like two, like sub $20 million players are coming in and dramatically changing the Lakers' odds against OKC or San Antonio. Maybe, you know, nudges you closer and you have a better chance of like putting together a competent rotation against them. But I think you need like an actual, like you need a Peyton Watson and a Mitchell Robinson, but that's going to probably cost you at least 45, if not $50 million. And you don't get there without losing LeBron or Rui. And then at that point, now you're swapping in like two guys for one, but you're net one player in the rotation. And like, I think you need to add those guys and keep LeBron and Rui. And that's where they just run into this, like the $50 million sounds great on paper, but when you actually start applying it to like Rui, LeBron, Marcus, all these guys, it goes away quickly. And so,
I did an ideal offseason roster build the other day and ran into that a lot. It got to the point where I basically had to try to get creative, and it's probably not super realistic, but find a way to dump Fando, to dump Connect in order to open up the ability to hang on to guys and actually add to the roster. Because otherwise, you're right in that we're essentially talking about a two steps forward, but you also have to take two steps back in order to get there because you have to lose certain players. The Lakers, that's the challenge that they're in. And you can say, well, they've got tons of cap space. They do. But the top free agents are already Lakers. So there's guys that would be leaving their roster that are valuable. It's not like there's a $50 million player on their roster that does nothing and that guy is expiring and you're going to replace that guy with a bunch of really good players that are going to come in and now be starters or rotation level players at worst. That's not the calculus here for the Lakers, because it would be Rui, it would be LeBron. These are the guys that Kennard, these are the guys that you would be having to make some tough decisions with potentially. So you've got to find a way to add to this roster, not take away. For example, we talk a lot about the move last summer to, it's very defensible to say we're going from Jordan Goodwin to Marcus Smart, right? We're gonna sacrifice Jordan Goodwin. We're gonna have to cut him his non-guaranteed salary, and we're gonna use that in order to go get Marcus Smart. Again, very defensible. But the real step forward is keeping Jordan Goodwin and getting Marcus Smart. Now that's much easier said than done. But that's essentially the problem facing the Lakers this summer.
Or dumping Dalton Connect and keeping
exactly Goodwin, right, which... exactly. But you've got to find a way to move off of the players that aren't really contributing. And unfortunately, the guys that they have the flexibility to move off of right now without having to surrender assets are the guys they don't want to move off their roster.
This that cap dynamic with the space running out fast is where I keep coming back to with Rui. That is so complicated because, like, if you look at the Spurs and the Thunder payroll, they have some guys that are like overpaid, like Aaron Wiggins and Isaiah Joe combined to make about $23 million. Like if you look at the Spurs payroll, Harrison Barnes makes $19 million. Kelly Olynyk makes $13 million. The difference is both of those teams have extensive chunks of their rotation on rookie contracts or heavily discounted contracts, which the Lakers don't have. So because the Lakers don't have that, and unless Rob has some plan to accumulate three dudes who make less than $5 million a year that are good rotation players this summer, which, you know, maybe he'll get one and that'd be a huge win, but unless he can pull that off, the reality is you are kind of at the mercy of your cap space. And unless you feel damn sure that Rui's going to be this guy that's going to be a foundational piece in your core five, then you can't afford to pay him $20+ million a year. That's handcuffing yourself moving forward. And I'd actually argue, so let's say for instance, because the counter argument to that would be, well, if we let Rui go, then we're worse. Well, mm-hmm. My counter argument to that would be, if you're already a tier below OKC in San Antonio, you got to have some plan to eventually make it into that conversation. And by handcuffing yourself with a deal that's going to be really difficult to move down the line, you're not doing yourself any favors in the long run, and you're still not good enough. So like, that's where, like, I think there's got to be some complicated decisions that Rob Pelinka has to make this summer involving like not making a marginal improvement at the expense of their long-term flexibility.
Optionality, if you will.
Yeah, optionality, if you will.
All right, let's go here. Christopher said, Lakers, Denver, Minnesota, same problem. Built to win now, but San Antonio, OKC are better now, plus more assets, runway to improve, and may even widen the gap the next 3 to 5 years. Sure. I mean, look, there's There's a reason why OKC doesn't want other teams to be able to tank and accumulate multiple years of draft picks. And I don't think it's all just thinking big picture about the tanking problem and the betterment of the entire NBA. Yes, they tanked for a few years. They did a great job drafting. They landed a bunch of picks. They've got a bunch of guys that are on. They made smart decisions in the draft. They've got a bunch of guys that are on cheap contracts. Minnesota was built to beat Denver. They've been very good about that. The problem is the big bad is no longer Denver, right? That's the challenge that these teams are now facing. It's how do you contend with these teams that have these guys that are young, athletic, they can dribble, pass, shoot, they can defend. I mean, hell, look at the defensive play that Devin Vassell made last night when it looked like an easy dunk for Chet Holmgren in that game. They've got guys that can make plays on both sides of the ball. That's a very difficult challenge for all of these teams to have to overcome. That said, the one thing that I can say for everybody who says, well, screw it, we're not going to match OKC, we're not going to match San Antonio. Frankly, 28 teams, if they're having that mindset, should just say, well, forget it, tear it down, rebuild. We know that's not going to happen. But change is constant. Change is the one thing that consistently happens. So a few years ago, we looked at it and we said, man, how is anybody going to deal with Denver in the future? Man, how is anybody going to deal with Boston in the future? The one thing that we've seen is that the NBA is constantly changing. So right now, it may look like, oh my God, how do we beat OKC? How do we beat San Antonio? But this league is constantly changing, is constantly evolving. Who knows? I mean, Jason, you mentioned it last night over text. Maybe we do enter an era where it's like Cavs Warriors and they just see each other every year for four straight years, and that's that. And that's the way this ultimately plays out. But what we've seen over the last 7 years has been constant change in the NBA. So I don't think there should be this defeatist attitude of, nope, those guys are so good, screw it, let's just go home mentality. I think you've got to do what you can to try to give yourself a chance. Make your team as best as it possibly can be, understanding that there is no version of this where on paper you're going to go into the season and say, we've got a better roster than the Thunder, we've got a better roster than San Antonio. All you can focus on is making your team as good as you possibly can and giving yourself a shot.
Agreed.
Let's go here. Karl Marx said, if Kessler wants to come to LA and Utah would only sign and trade him. I hate that the best free agents are restricted free agents. Drives me crazy. Would you give up all three picks, Vando, DK, and Jake, to get him? Helps us move on from Vando money. So you are taking at least one contract that's definitely negative value. We could talk about Connect and Jake, where they ultimately land. Are they negative? Are they neutral? Whatever, right? But Vando is certainly a negative value contract, owed, what, 25 plus million over the next 2 years here. You're moving off a negative value contract, but you're also giving up all of your picks to pay Walker Kessler what? I mean, that's the question here, is what does that contract come in at? I think this is going a bit far to get. And I like Walker Kessler. But to me, I think giving up all three picks for the right to sign Walker Kessler to whatever his big contract is when the guy just played five games last year is going a bit too far.
I agree.
Yeah, I mean, I view it more so as like it's going to cost the first to get off Vando. That's just what it's going to cost. And, sure. And so anyone who's throwing out a hypothetical Vando trade, I just think you have to factor that in. And it's like the Lakers have 1 second to trade. So sure, is there a scenario? Maybe they could dump 3 seconds for Vando, you know, with Vando or some 3 or 4 seconds and get off him that way. Yeah, but they don't have 3 or 4 seconds to trade. They have 1 second to trade. So it's not going to be like a pick swap or something, because you're also, if you're improving, like the Lakers are set up, they're not set up like OKC or San Antonio, but they are set up well over the next few years. I'm not just going to do a pick swap with the Lakers over the next few years. That's probably going to end up being meaningless. So I'm going to need a first to take on Jared Vanderbilt's contract. And that's like I think the minimum price right now. So it's really, to me, looking at it more through the lens of like Dalton plus Jake and 2 firsts for Walker Kessler, which that sounds a lot better to me than I know, like you're kind of splitting the transaction here, but it's almost like I'm putting the Vando and the 1 first aside. And I'm saying, would you do DK and Jake in 2 firsts for Walker Kessler? I would do that. But if you do add in all 3 firsts, obviously, you now that's going to limit your flexibility down the road. And like, that is something to think about. So I may be more on the side of like, do this just because you get to keep Austin. You can still potentially keep Marcus and Rui, depending on where, like, I would hope Kessler would, you could get Kessler on a discount at least to like, maybe you could get Kessler at 28 million instead of 32 or 34 or whatever, because sure. It's like he is being signed and traded in this scenario. You're still saving money if you're Utah and you're getting three picks out of it. So can you get Kessler at like a little bit of a lower rate and have a little bit more financial flexibility? But I mean, but this is where like we keep coming into that. There's no like perfect option or pathway here. And I think if it is via trade, the Lakers are probably going to have to overpay. There might be a scenario in which they don't, like that would obviously be ideal. I just, the options, like there's a lot of optionality, but a lot of the options are bad in my opinion. And it's going to be interesting to see how LA is able to find like the you know, few options that are actually good.
So here's what I would do in this scenario. And this is obviously the math would be a big factor in this, in terms of what you could ultimately do with Jared Vanderbilt. If I had the ability to do this and still make the moves that I want to make, I would rather, if it's costing me a first to get off of Vando, I would rather pull the first out of the deal, pull Vando out of the deal. And if I need the flexibility, waive and stretch his salary over the next 5 years at $5 million. That would be what I would, if there was a way to, for the math still to work, to do make your other moves, I would go that route and try to hang on to the first round pick if I could, because I still need the ability to make other moves. That's probably the way I would go. But again, the downside is now you've got $5 million sitting dead on your books for the next 5 years. But to me, that's not the end of the world. I'd rather have the first round pick than deal with the pain of losing the pick just to clear Vando off.
It's a good point.
All right. We do need to give a shout out to one last sponsor here. Then we'll get to a couple of questions before we roll on out of here. Let's give a thank you to Shopify.
Starting something new isn't just hard, it's terrifying. There's always that moment before launching something where you're thinking, is this actually going to work? Whether it's starting a business, launching a product, or building something online, there are a lot of moving parts, and having the right tools behind the scenes can make a huge difference. That's where Shopify comes in. Shopify is the commerce platform behind millions of businesses around the world and powers 10% of all e-commerce in the US. With hundreds of ready-to-use templates, Shopify helps you build a beautiful online store that matches your brand. It's also packed with helpful AI tools that can write product descriptions, page headlines, and even enhance your product photography. And Shopify helps you get the word out with email and social media campaigns so you can reach customers wherever they're scrolling. Plus, everything you need, inventory, payments, analytics, and more is all in one place. So it's time to turn those what ifs into cha-ching with Shopify today. Sign up for your $1 per month trial today at shopify.com/LakersPod. Again, that's shopify.com/LakersPod.
All right, let's go with this one. J-Rod said, out of these restricted free agents, which team would fold if we offered $25 million? And keep in mind, it's been years and years and years since the team has blinked when their restricted free agent was given a contract offer. We also typically don't even see RFAs get offers from other teams. So keep in mind, there's a rare thing for this to occur. But Kessler, Duren, Watson, also kind of hope we draft a center. It's been a while since we did. I think the easy answer here is Peyton Watson, but that's simply because of the Nuggets cap situation compared to the situation that Denver and Utah find themselves in.
Yeah, I agree.
I don't think you're getting Kessler or Duren for $25 million. I think those are both $30+ million guys. And the other thing that I just quickly is like, Chicago is kind of in a position where they need, I mean, not even kind of, they are in a position where they need a center. So the Lakers are going to be looking for a center, but Chicago has a bunch of cap space and they, I mean, they could get into like a bit of a bidding war for some of these RFAs, or even if it comes to like a Mitchell Robinson or something like that. So Lakers will have some competition on that front.
Valentino said, if Luka really wants to win a title, he should go team up with someone, for example, to the Wolves with Ant. With LA's roster, it's impossible to compete. Obviously, that's it. That's a scenario the Lakers don't want to deal with, but that's part of why I've been saying like, the Lakers need, they can't kick the can down the road any further, because then you start running into questions about, does Luka start looking around when he hits free agency? 2028 is a little ways away, but it's not that far away. You know what I mean? So they've got to get some things sorted out and get Luka thinking, hey, we can win here and not, you know, want to go somewhere else. But I don't think Luka at this point or the Lakers are in to any degree thinking, yeah, let's try to work a trade and get Luka out of LA.
The good news is, like we just talked about, even if you did pair Luka with Giannis, it's not a guarantee that they're better than the Spurs or the Thunder. And that is a problem that 28 of the other teams are dealing with. Mm-hmm. And any team that wants to match Luka's salary and send out a bunch of picks is going to similarly be strapped in their attempts to try to match OKC and San Antonio's talent. So the good news is that the Lakers are in the similar predicament to everyone else. Like, even with all of the flaws, they were what, like somewhere around the, you know, when they were fully healthy, like when Luka was actually going in March, like they were probably the fifth best team in the league. So with everything that was going wrong, like they're in that range, like you call it 4-7, whatever you want to call it. Point is like they were still better than most of the teams when they were healthy, even if we can agree they were a tier below that that San Antonio OKC tier. But I also agree with you, Trevor, where it's like, I think the bigger thing that could trigger Luka wanting out is if there's no clear sign of progress. Every cycle needs to be progress. He needs to feel like the team is better in training camp this year than it was last year, or next year than it was this year, I should say. He should feel like they're better after the deadline. He should feel like they're better after the following summer cycle. Like, every cycle needs to feel like a big step forward in that direction. And if that doesn't materialize, I think Luka would start looking elsewhere.
And I think quickly we could just argue that they have not taken big step forward since they have acquired Luka. Like, the Mark Williams trade, which got rescinded, was an attempt at that. But Marcus Smart, DeAndre Ayton, Jake LaRavia, Luke Kennard all had their moments of contributing and are impactful players to varying degrees. But those are all short-term solutions. None of those guys are long-term solutions for the Lakers. So, like, they have yet to add, I think they've yet to add a player that's like going to be playing with Luka like 3 years from now. And I think that needs to be the focus of this summer, is adding a couple of those types of players.
There was this, I think it's crazy because people always talk about the Russell Westbrook trade as like the thing that killed the Lakers, and it very much was. I think we all agree. But there have been 9 cycles since then, 9 summers and trade deadlines. And like, one of them included a GM handing Rob Luka Doncic. So like, that is what's happened in the last 9 cycles. And I would argue that there's like a 99% chance that we will go into next season with it being the 7th time in the 9 years with LeBron on the roster where they don't have a top tier championship contending roster. So like, to Jovan's point, like, yeah, we want steps forward, but we have 9 steps since the Russell Westbrook trade, and they've gone from play-in team to middle of the West team. That's been the improvement.
That's depressing. But yes, you're not wrong. We're not getting Giannis without trading Luka, be real. Okay, Miami's not getting Giannis without trading Bam. New York is not getting Giannis without trading Brunson. The Wolves are not getting Giannis without trading Ant. The Warriors are not getting Giannis without trading Steph, be real. Right? I mean, you can do that with any team. Is it likely the Lakers are going to get Giannis? No. But typically with these superstar trades, it's not star for star. It's multiple pieces put together in order to get a deal done, because teams want to team that guy up with what they've already got on their team. So again, is it likely the Lakers are getting Giannis? No, but it's also not likely that when the Bucks do trade Giannis, that they're getting back the top superstar from whatever team they're trading that player to, because Giannis is going to want to play with that dude when he winds up getting dealt.
They're not the favorites, but I do fundamentally disagree with this in the sense of, if they do somehow acquire Giannis, I think it's going to either be 3 picks plus acquiring him into space, or 3 picks plus Austin. It's not going to be Luka. I wouldn't trade Luka for Giannis.
Have you guys been looking at draft prospects? Would love Cameron Carr and getting Zubi in the second round. So I am way behind. I say this every damn year. Every time I think, okay, today I'm going to sit down and really dig in deep on the draft prospects and stuff winds up popping up. So I am way behind on my draft prep. Where are you guys at? Are you guys at a point where you can give any kind of informed opinion?
I've started to do some draft research. My understanding, I think this 25 would be low for Cameron Carr. The Lakers would probably have to trade up for him. I think there are some scenarios in which he could maybe slip there, but like, it seems like he's more of a late teens, early 20s type guy. But I am on board with him if he's available at 25. And then I've not done enough research for the second round yet.
Yeah, I usually start my research after the finals.
All right, everybody, we're going to wrap things up there. I will save the Super Chat questions that we didn't get to. We'll be back later on in the week. We wound up saying Friday, right?
Yep.
Okay, so Friday, yeah, we'll be back with another show. I will save the chat questions that we did not get to yet, but I appreciate all of you for being here. And guys, this wound up being, I thought, a really fun conversation, and appreciate getting to have this one with you guys.
Yeah, let's do the mailbag Friday. Just let's start with those questions and then give people more time to put questions in. We'll just do a mailbag day. That sounds fun.
Perfect. Mailbag Friday.
Let's do it.
Let's go. All right, everybody. Till then, see ya and stay safe.